Hoy, hoy, friends, neighbors, countrymen, gather around the internet for the infotainment podcast is about to begin. Hi, my name is Randy, and I would like to welcome you to my episode of Infotainment, my latest episode, coming up on the big 100th episode of this program. First up on the podcast docket, I just received a video across Facebook. I don't know what this guy was doing. Maybe he thought he was the next great inventor of the seat warmer for your house, but I shared it with friends on Facebook. He hot glued some wires to a plastic chair that he sat on. There was no control on it to adjust the temperature or nothing, but he plugs it in and things did not go well. He jumped up almost immediately. The wires were red hot, and he was like jumping around. And he got the wires off or something, but he set his pants on fire. It's the funniest thing. And people were going, "What a dumbass!" And so I added the comment on my repost that, well, Kate Beckinsale has the same thing. I did see a picture of her at a pro sporting event, basketball game, I believe, kissing her new boy toy. Turns out she's into funny guys, a lot younger ones. I just thought about that. It's good if you can get it. They got a comment from her former boyfriend, and all he said was "run." Like a guy's gonna say, "Oh yeah, well, Kate Beckinsale dumped me." You know, what are you going to say about something like that? I am so glad that I have changed my microphone to dynamic. Blue Yeti just picked up too much noise, and now my apartment is an older complex. And besides the refrigerator noise and the piping making this B-type noise, I don't know what that is. And now it's the heating registers making a, motor running noise or something like a jackhammer, and the extraneous train horns blowing at times. It makes for a tough podcast to do. I'm surprised I've even got one to sound halfway decent. If I was making a ton of dough off this podcast, I'd have my own building and have my own studio built professionally with all the bells and whistles. Now we are going to take a hard left turn onto this topic. This is the number one thing you should not do when going through a drive-thru at a fast food restaurant. Sometimes when you pull up to a drive-thru window, you're not exactly sure what you want. As you take a few minutes to peruse the menu, you can practically hear the irritation from the person on the other side of the intercom waiting for you to decide. Then there are the times when you get to the first window and are scrounging for a correct change while the cashier sticks their hand out in annoyance. But believe it or not, these aren't even the things that annoy drive-thru employees the most. There is one major drive-thru mistake you most likely made that is actually the worst of all. Even though it sounds so minor, this seemingly harmless habit has a big impact on the person at the drive-thru window. What's the number one drive-thru window mistake you can make? It turns out the biggest thing you should never do at a drive-thru is changing or adding more items onto your order when you're at the cashier window to pay. Deciding to add on an order of fries or that milkshake you forgot to get for your friend not only slows down the entire process for both you and the customers in line behind you, but it also makes the employee's job more difficult too. See, the employee then has to re-enter the order. They can't just tack it on so that they can charge you for the new items, and you have to wait longer for your order as a result. But what you don't realize is that many drive-thrus have some behind-the-scenes things going on that get much more complicated once you add on to your order. One KFC employee noted on Reddit that ordering more food can actually come at a cost to the restaurant. It's irritating because if we total the order, we can't go back and change it except to add more to it, which means if they want something completely different, we have to void it out of the system, the employee wrote. The location I work at is very strict on the amounts of voids that we get in a day. Even three is too much, and we are actively encouraged to avoid them as much as possible. The cost of the void adds up quickly. Each night we have to report the number of voids that we get and the cost of each. Another fast food employee noted on Reddit that drive-thrus are often one-timers. These are timers on timers. There are timers installed in the drive-thru, and once those times get up to about 60 seconds, the boss starts flipping out on the crew because they aren't working fast or hard enough, the employee wrote. So if someone has to take the time to add new items onto their order, it could get them into trouble with their manager too. The timer starts as soon as you pull up to the drive-thru, another employee noted on Reddit. So if you change your order, stare at the menu for several minutes, don't have your payment ready, need to order something else, or sit there checking your order, you could also potentially be getting someone into trouble with their boss. Another person noted on Reddit that oftentimes the more fast food a restaurant is, the more strict they tend to be about the timers. Basically, knowing your order before you get to the speaker and not changing it when you pull up to the window can save employees a lot of headaches. Obviously, there are worse things than ordering an extra side or a drink at the drive-thru window, but if you're not in a huge rush, it'd be better for you and the employee if you either get back in the drive-thru line again or order the additional items inside. Everyone will be grateful, and you'll still get what you want. And also, I was wondering, how are you about ordering from like McDonald's kiosks and going through the self-checkout at Walmart? I always thought, well, I have used a self-checkout at Walmart, but I learned, well, someone told me, and I pretty much knew this, that you're taking away jobs from actual people by using the self-checkout. But I found that it doesn't save me any more time, because most of the time I'm searching for the darn barcodes, which takes a lot longer for the person to than a cashier would. And once they see a lot of people in the line for the regular cashiers, then they have to add more cashiers up to the front. I tried the McDonald's ordering kiosk once, and it would not bring me to the pay screen. So I don't know what was wrong with that, but I just go to the regular person, so hopefully it keeps their employees up and the kiosks don't do as well. It just takes away jobs. I do have one thing that I'd like to complain about when I do go and order fast food. This is when I give the person the entire order that I want. At McDonald's, it's number 3 meal, and at Burger King, it's number 5. I give them the entire order, and then they it's like they don't listen to a word I say, and they start me over doing the complete order again, asking me the same things that I already told them. Another thing that should make employers mad is when they get the order wrong and they actually send out something extra, which they did to me the other day. I got an extra fry, but he said, well, it's too late now. I think it was the manager that brought it out, and somebody might have got scolded about that. So what are your complaints about fast food? I'm sure there are lots of others that can go down in the books. I now have another titillating topic for your podcast perusal. As if raising a child wasn't difficult, expensive, and aggravating enough at times, how about the problems of raising a gifted child? I have this article here. It says, my son is a gifted child. Here's why raising him has been anything but easy. Yeah, if your child acts like Sheldon Cooper all the time, I think I would become a basket case and have to leave. That would be extremely annoying. And they have a picture of the kid, and he's a flaming ginger, and he has even worse hair than Adam Conover from the show Adam Ruins Everything. It's all kind of peaked in the middle with just really bizarre. But they knew pretty early on that their son was a little different. It kind of doesn't really say what he's gifted at. It just kind of says he complains a lot that school wasn't hard enough for him. At a young age, I guess he'd go up to other kids in the playground and speak in proper sentences. Hi, nice to meet you. I'm 18 months old. How are you? Old are you? By age 3, he understood multiplication and division. By age 4, he was writing stories and reading books. One day he came home from preschool raving about the delicious cylinder-shaped snack. It was a tortilla wrap, we figured out. He must be gifted friends with older kids said now and then. But we never even said the word. Gifted sounded so pretentious, so ridiculous, so not us. All 3 of our kids seemed bright, and our son, the middle child, was just an early bloomer, we figured. At the end of the first week of first grade, he said fiercely, I hate this school. As the months crawled by, first grade just got worse. He raged about his coloring homework. He complained that he was only allowed to check out easy books in the library. He begged us to give him hard math problems. On weekends, he assigned himself research essays about weird topics that intrigued him. Cloud computing, Buckingham Palace guards, Alcatraz. If I was this kid's dad, I would buy a bunch of computer parts and say, here, kid, build a really advanced, fast computer. Maybe get him to follow around a plumber or something, or electrician, so he can learn some things. But he complained daily about the class-wide punishments. Why should everyone get in trouble? He asked us angrily when he didn't do anything wrong. He was so unhappy. First grade is even easier than kindergarten, he told us through tears. And my teacher is always yelling at us. He began faking sick on a regular basis in a bid to stay home from school. He's 8 now, in 3rd grade, but when I picture my son, this is still what I see. He's 6 years old, his small shoulders hunched, blinking back tears as we walk out of the school. He looks helpless and hopeless. That first grade year will never leave me. We asked his first grade teacher if she'd meet with us, but she said she'd prefer to communicate via email. I sent her a heartfelt and carefully worded email detailing my concerns, how he found the work so easy, how he was worried the class was falling behind, how he disliked the class-wide punishments. Her responses were brief, peppered with quotation marks. He seemed quite sensitive, she wrote. He seems to be internalizing classroom discussions, feeling like he's in trouble when I have to have a talk with the class. I asked about the possibility of more challenging work. She called me on the phone and admitted she knew the work was too easy and she was doing what she could with limited time and resources. I can't meet his needs, she said. There's no way our curriculum could meet his needs. I think there's special schools for gifted kids, isn't there? Out of school, he was generally happy. We had a running joke about how he was a 40-year-old man trapped in a little boy's body. Oh my God, I could see where this kid would drive his parents nuts. Mingle with that miserable first grade year are so many sweet and funny memories. After losing a tooth, he wrote a long and virtually flawless missive that began, "Dear Tooth Fairy, I'm sorry to say I swallowed my tooth." He wondered why the female principal of his school wasn't called a princess apple, and then explained to us the Latin word princeps after he looked it up. At the children's museum, he draped accessories atop the giant checkers pieces, modifying the game so he could challenge us to chess. Instead, he asked the barber to give him a haircut that would make him look mature. Well, if that was the haircut he gave him in his picture, I would ask for my money back. But he wondered aloud why the female principal of his school. Oh, that's the same thing. But first grade remained a daily nightmare. In hopes of shedding some light on his needs and our schooling options, we took him to a psychologist. The result, he was gifted, very gifted. Well, we haven't really found out. Why don't they try some different things? What is he really gifted at? I mean, like computers, electric guitar, mathematics, engineering. I wish I had been an electric guitar and got the Brad Pitt gene. I mean, I love my dad and stuff, but he did not have the Brad Pitt gene. Back in 1963, if I could go back in time, I would tell my dad, "Here, could you let this man stand in for you one night?" Maybe it would have made a big difference. But at that time, I was interested in photography, and women are so turned on by gifted photographers. Well, to get back to our story here, this is the point in our story when the ice starts rolling. Yes, my kid is gifted. Am I bragging? No. Do I think he's more special than other kids? No. Do I even like the word gifted? Not particularly. Giftedness is nothing to be proud of, and it's nothing we cause. It just means my son is wired differently. It's an inherent trait, a special need, actually, that comes with a whole host of worries. Yeah, I was gifted with bipolar. If I could give that off to anybody that wants it, they can have it. For one thing, my son is intensely emotional and sensitive. When the teacher said someone stole the math books, the math blocks off my desk, and we will all suffer the loss, most first graders said it wasn't me and moved on. My kid agonized for days and one night at bedtime whispered, "Mommy, does suffering physically hurt, or did my teacher pick an inaccurate word?" He has a strong sense of justice and fairness. When a lunchroom supervisor had all the kids at the cafeteria table lay their heads down for a moment as punishment for being noisy, most kids complied and moved on. My son complained that night at dinner that it was incredibly degrading. Oh boy. Like around 1 in 5 gifted kids, my son struggles with perfectionism. He can't stand doing something if he knows he won't do it perfectly. Well, kid, that's a way to challenge yourself. Putting together a computer with all the parts, Doesn't sound like the parents were really trying to help him out in advance. Let's see. He also struggles with asynchronous development, which means while he may have understood logarithms in the first grade, he could barely tie his shoes, and he still put his pants on backwards sometimes. Yeah, this kid sounds like a real Sheldon Cooper all the way. He feels different, and like he said, kind of like an alien. He sometimes gets along better with adults than he does with kids. I've seen awkward interactions firsthand. My son's idea of conversation starter is often something like, did you ever notice that the word repetition has repetition in it? It repeats the letters T-I. But not all little boys want to talk about that stuff. Yeah, would any little boy want to talk about that? He tends to take the weight of the world on his shoulders. He worries about people who don't have enough to eat or access to clean water. Well, maybe working on those problems might be an outlet for him. Feeling like the world's crises are his problems to solve. His first grade teacher promised to sponsor a well in a third world country if the class improved their behavior, and he agonized daily over the prospect of failing. In my class is disrespectful, he said. We are literally taking away those kids' chances at clean water. He doesn't hold in his feelings. When something in his life goes wrong, the shock waves of misery reverberate through our entire family. And it's an understatement to say that first grade was going wrong. He needs to give up on ruminating about first grade. That first grade year just kept getting worse. The gifted program coordinator told us we were asking for special treatment when we begged for enrichment, subject acceleration, or something. Advancing him a few grades probably would be another thing they could have tried. The principal looked at me blankly as I explained that my son was regularly trying to make himself vomit to stay home from school. He seems fine at school, she said finally. Maybe it's something at home that's making him unhappy. We were done. We knew we couldn't stay at that school. But what we were supposed to do? Homeschooling was not an appealing option. The private gifted school the psychologist recommended was an hour away, and tuition was $25,000 per year. Well, you know, there's a little roadblock there I can see. Our salvation came in an unlikely form. A terrific public school with an excellent gifted program in a little city 15 miles from home. By some miracle, they had room for out-of-district students. Though we spend some time driving and life is more hectic, I'm relieved my son no longer hates school. He is in third grade now, 8 years old. If you turn my age sideways, I'd be infinite, he said recently, and happier than he's ever been. The work is challenging. There are no class-wide punishments. His current teacher is one of his favorite people in the world, and we've had nothing but good experiences with the entire staff, not to mention zero awkward meetings. The school is incredibly welcoming, and the principal is friendly and caring. I struggle with good old parent guilt. Are we doing enough, providing ample stimulation and the right opportunities? Some gifted kids my son's age take college-level classes. Well, that might be a good thing. Compete in high-stakes academic competitions and make news for their research projects. Mine plays Minecraft and rides bikes after school. Well, that doesn't really enhance his giftedness, I guess. The gifted kid journey is also a lonely one. I can't exactly talk about our struggles, complaining that my kid is smart, bemoaning the lack of local chess teams for 8-year-olds, right? I've seen the memes, I've read the message boards, comments, and I'm already well aware that many people see the parents of gifted kids as special snowflakes. The thing is, none of us chose this. When a friend told me her daughter missed the cutoff for the gifted program by a few points, it was all I could do not to say, "Lucky you." We found out recently that both of our children are also gifted, though their giftedness is not quite as in your face as our middle son. They're happy, thankfully. They're thriving at school and finding regular classwork challenging enough. Well, what makes you think they're as gifted as the middle kid? But I worry about the future when I consider the realities of having three gifted kids rather than one. All I could think was, is this what parenting is going to be like for us, advocating for harder work, attending stressful meetings at their schools, worrying we're not doing enough? I adore my son, and I wouldn't change anything about him. I want him to be happy, to love life, to feel fulfilled. He is an amazing kid. I can't wait to watch him grow into an amazing adult. But I'm not going to pretend it's easy having a gifted kid. Yeah, I can see where that would be really hard. Find the right curriculum and school for this kid to go to. And he sounds like a real Sheldon Cooper. That just would be horrific and anxiety for the parents dealing with that. Boy, I wish I had been. Maybe like electric guitar and had the Brad Pitt gene. Now, it's kind of funny. At one time, I lived in a... Maybe I told this story. I don't know if I did or not. It's hard to keep track of what all the hell I talk about on these shows. I don't increase my workload. They're hard enough to put out as much as I do. But at one time, I lived less than 100 miles away from Brad Pitt. And he was 1 year older than me and possibly in school at the same time I was. He is from Springfield, Missouri, and I lived in Granby, Missouri, which claim to fame was on the water tower that they were the oldest mining town in the Southwest. So I would like to welcome CJ back to the program. And he's got some different news stories for us. Let's give him a round of applause.
Thank you.
And he is coming through on our phone and using the Rodecaster Pro Mixer. Did you happen to catch Ghost Adventures this evening?
No, I did not. I actually got called away. I was not able to catch it. I've been watching a lot of them. In fact, when I get done here, I'm going to go watch DVR quite a few of them. So I'll probably watch one of them that's been DVR'd. So I take it you probably did.
Yeah, it was pretty weird what they discovered. They were in Grand Junction, Colorado, at this spooky hotel where this... husband dismembered his wife at in some area of this hotel, and they were trying to talk to her spirit, and kept saying the word help over their ovulus, and they were jumping around, and stuff was touching them and hearing footsteps like they usually do, and it was a interesting program.
That gets me because they are looking for, you know, the undiscovered, and when they find it, they just freak out over it. It's more hilarious to watch their reactions. You know, they should know that, you know, they're going to find weird stuff, and their reactions are just way overboard, but it's still funny to watch.
Yeah. We used to watch the Tennessee Wraith Chasers. I don't know whatever happened to that group.
Yeah, I used to watch that too. I don't think their ratings must not have been real high, but I used to watch it.
Yeah, this is my first attempt at a phone call. We're using the TRR RS cable to hook up a phone for this podcast. And it's been a challenge to get his levels somewhat similar to mine, but we will do our best here. And earlier on, I did a story about what's the number one thing that ticks off employees at a fast food restaurant when you go through the drive-thru. What would you think would be the number one thing that makes them upset with people going through the drive-thru?
I don't know, if they go in backwards, like my buddy and I did when we lived in Phoenix.
You actually did that?
Yes, we did. My buddy was driving. He had a little tiny Honda Civic. They were smaller back then. They were smaller than what the Metros were. And we actually went through it backwards and almost didn't get served. But, yeah, it was, they kind of looked at us kind of weird. And it was kind of weird because I was sitting in the back seat. And, of course, when we were turned around, all of a sudden, you know, we got cars coming at us through the drive-thru. and they come around the corner, and they're facing headlights, you know, because we're going through backwards. So, but, yes, it's been done.
That would be weird. He must have been a pretty expert driver at going backwards. You'd think he'd veer it off course so you wouldn't get close enough to the window or anything.
Well, you know, like I say, it's a very small car, so you had lots of room. So,
well, what they did discover was the number one thing that people that work at fast food restaurants that irritates them the most and irritates the boss is when you change your order at the spot where you're paying for it, which I wouldn't think would be. I would have thought that when you can't decide at the menu board would be the most thing they would get upset about, because it takes a while to change the order around and all that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I like to go up there sometime and try to speak in a Star Trek language like Klingon or Vulcan and place an order.
Oh, it's kind of fun to go up to it and just, you know, disguise your voice and make some really weird noise and see what they say. Or act like the signal's breaking up, you know.
And what irritates the boss is when they take too long and when they have to change the order around. And also when the other day I got an extra order of fries, which I didn't order. And I think the boss brought it out and he said, well, it looks like you got an extra order of fries. Maybe you can take them home in a bag. But fast food fries do not last long and they're not very good after being put in the microwave or anything.
Now they're pretty wimpy.
Yeah. But the thing that irritates me the most is when I know my exact order and I give my exact order to the person and they're not listening to me. So they go through and ask me practically the entire order again, like they haven't heard anything I've said, which is bizarre. But they're so tightly scripted, I guess they don't know any other way.
Yep. Or you go up to them and you know, when you're all done, you say, well, that's all I need. And then they come back, oh, is there anything else I can get you? Well, no, I just told you that's all I need.
Yeah. Trying
and
to.
And besides, if there was something else I really wanted, you probably wouldn't give it to me. So, that's irritating when they say that after you tell them the order and that's all. Oh, is there anything else we can get for you?
I have a friend, Paul, who says he would never order from the kiosk because it's just taking away jobs. So
yeah, I've never ordered from a kiosk. My sister has. I haven't, though. We were in a Mickey D's somewhere once, and she proceeded to order from the kiosk. And I'm like, I'd rather. Yeah, I don't really even like going, when you go into Walmart's going through those self-cash pay things. I've done it, but I don't like to. I'll only do it if the lines are real long. Otherwise, I'd just soon work with a real person.
Yeah, same here. I have done it when I've only had a few items, but it doesn't save me any time if I have a lot of items, because most of the time I'm looking for the barcode. And that takes up a lot of time when you don't know and where they are better than the people checking out.
Yep.
And yep. And one of the posts I seen on Facebook today, they mentioned that, and someone suggested that they use the self-checkout, and the person goes, well, I don't really work here. So,
yeah, you could have a lot of fun with that. Well, if you pay me $5, I can get it to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
I work off the tips here at this Walmart.
Yeah, the tips, yeah. Are you ever watched or a fan of the show The Big Bang Theory?
No, I've seen it, but I don't watch it, no.
I did a story about it. That's the fun of broadcasting, is when your throat kind of seizes up. I should have, one of my cardinal rules is kind of clearing my throat before I start recording. And I do have something to drink here, so.
Hold it. Insert sound effect here. Okay. Continue on.
Yeah, what sound effect should I do?
Oh, I'm sure you got something. You got something in your arsenal.
Yeah. Oh, man, do I ever on my phone and stuff I recorded when they had those free soundboards where you'd go to and just you just click on a sound and it would play. I recorded the heck out of stuff. So I got a ton of sound effects on my computer and on my phone apps that I downloaded like 5 or 6 sound effect apps. So I've got quite a few. Guns and boings and explosions and animals and different things. So,
funny you just mentioned guns, because I got a story about, do you watch very many Westerns?
I have in the past. I've seen quite a few with Clint Eastwood.
Well, there's this Virginia woman who's seen a few too many Westerns. Well, she got into trouble recently while horseback riding. Her name was Mariah Smith. She's from Arlington, Texas, I think it was. Anyway, her and another woman were riding horses in a cemetery in Warren County. I'm sorry, not Texas. It was Virginia. Warren County, Virginia, when someone told them to remove the horses from the cemetery property, according to the sheriff's office. Well, Smith didn't like being told what to do, and she fired her pistol. No one was hit, but the deputies were called and detained the woman. Authorities say Smith had a .38 Smith & Wesson on her. She was arrested and charged with 3 firearms charges, including possessing a concealed firearm while under the influence. I bet you didn't see that last one detail coming, did you?
No. What was she trying to shoot at again?
Apparently, someone told her in the cemetery she couldn't ride the horses in the cemetery.
Oh,
so
geez.
She pulled out her Smith & Wesson and fired it, and then the authorities were called.
Oh, okay.
And in the process, she gets charged for concealing a firearm while under the influence. I wonder if she got charged for riding a horse under the influence.
I would think that's bad karma to do anything bad in a cemetery. Especially firing a gun or some people have been known to tip over gravestones or do damage to them. I would think that would be really bad karma.
Yeah, she could kill somebody in a cemetery. That wouldn't be very good.
I would. It would be interesting to go through a cemetery with some of the ghost hunting apps I have on my phone, just to see if you would catch anything or take my digital recorder too and see if anything like that would pop up as a ghost or spirit.
Yeah, they say the digital recorders, it's got to be a special one that Panasonic put out years ago, and it had a flaw in it. Apparently it was that flaw that made it possible for the spirits to come through, or whatever you want to call it. But I don't know. I've never done that, so I don't know, but that's what I've heard.
Yeah, I don't have a special one. I've tried it around the apartment, but the freakiest thing I saw was one where it kind of gave you an image of a ghost on it. I don't know if it was what it was weird, but it looked like it was the Grim Reaper, kind of an outline, and it looked like it was carrying an axe, and it kind of floated like into the elevator. That was pretty freaky. And I do have one that has the ovulus on there, but I assume the phone can get your name from some other app or the information or whatever you have on your phone. But it's said my name a few times, and then one time it did say, "I'm inside of you."
That'd be weird.
That creeped me out.
Then did it burp?
No, it didn't fart either.
It didn't say, "Let me out, let me out."
Oh, somebody posted a picture on Facebook today. I haven't commented on it yet, but it showed some woman who farted, but she was wearing skinny jeans, and her legs were like super thin, but her butt was like super huge.
Flames?
What was that?
Say, did she shoot flames?
I don't know. So, a lesson learned, do not have gas in your skinny jeans.
Well, I don't have any skinny jeans, so I guess I have nothing to worry about.
And we're lucky, too, that we grew up in an era where we do not wear the hairstyle, the man bun, where it's rolled up in a bun like a woman's hairstyle from the 50s.
Yep, no thank you, not for me.
It's like, if you're going to have that, why not just wear a t-shirt that says, "I am a woman"?
And, yep.
And there's one, my sister sent me this over Facebook. Well, it was a general post, but it said inspiration can come from anywhere. And it had like three guys on top and pictures with real small hair buns tied up in a knot. And then down below, it had tied up trash bags. So they got inspiration from a tied up trash bag and how to put a top knot in their hairdo. So
crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. But
no.
Nope, I never had a hairstyle like that, but wouldn't do it either. I wouldn't do it either.
No. I guess some have to do it for their work, but we'll give them a little break. But if you do it just in general, it's not a good look for a man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it just looks a little out of order. I mean, I've seen little ponytails and stuff guys have had, and it looks odd, not nearly as bad as the man bun.
I will admit to having a hairstyle in the early 80s that people make fun of nowadays, and it was the mullet.
Oh, I do too, and quite honestly, I got pictures, and quite honestly, if the mullet would come back, I'd have one in a heartbeat.
Wow.
I like the long hair in the back, but I hate long hair on the sides. It's got to be short, and I'd do it in a heartbeat.
There was one time I did have the back hair, and it was curly when it came out really long, and it was about down to my shoulders. And I did have a woman compliment that, but unfortunately she was older, and I would have said, "Oh, you want to touch it?" But run your fingers through my mullet. Yeah.
You know, you talked about some guys having to put up their hair because of their work or whatever. I've got another work-related story here. It comes out of Gothenburg, Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like to get paid a ton of money for doing absolutely nothing?
Sign me up.
Well, apparently they are taking applications online right now for a job where you get paid like $2,300 U.S. dollars a month, and there's benefits and stuff. But the only catch is you have to live in Sweden. If you think government workers are lazy, wait until you hear about this one. Thanks to a government-funded conceptual art project in Gothenburg, Sweden, a person will be hired for a permanent position to do absolutely nothing. The employee, you can't make this stuff up. The employee in question will report to the Korsavag train station, which is still under construction in the city. And they'll receive a salary of about $2,300 a month in U.S. dollars, plus annual wage increases, vacation time off, and a pension for retirement. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay, here's the job requirements, and I hope, you know, this would qualify you or me. The job requirements couldn't be more simple. An employee shows up each morning, punches a time clock. At the end of the day, the worker returns to clock out. In between, they can do whatever they want to do aside from working at another paying job. They're not even obligated to stay at the station all day long, and their employment is guaranteed for life. While the artists behind the project won't be taking applications until the station will be closer to opening, a draft of the Help Wanted ad is already available online. I'm going to have to find that. I'd like to see what that actually says. But you can check out the Help Wanted ad. I suppose just Google it or something. You'll probably find it. And the only catch to it, like I said earlier, you got to live in Sweden. I guess you could say that would be a Sweden job.
There we go. I'm still learning this Rodecaster Pro, and I had my mute thing to clear my throat again, and did not hit it. But what city was that?
Well, it was in Sweden, and of course, my computer just shut off. Here it is. It was in Gothenburg, Sweden.
Gothenburg. I'm writing that down.
Gothenburg, Sweden.
I've never been there, but I would like to go because I have heard people that have been there, you can practically go anywhere and see women that are on a scale from 1 to 10, they are a 50. even at, if you go to like a convenience-like store, and it's just like, man, this job I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, it's at a train station. And now, the story mentioned something about an artist, so I don't understand what that was all about, but didn't matter, whatever. It didn't sound like he had to do much, and it was at a train station called the Korsvägen, I think that's how you pronounce it, Korsvägen train station in Gothenburg, Sweden.
$2,300 in U.S. dollars a month.
Yep.
I wonder how well you can live on that in Sweden.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what the cost of living is like. I bet that'd be one of those jobs I'm sure everybody would apply for and probably pretty hard to get.
There isn't. I wonder if there's a place you can stay at the train station, or you would have to live somewhere else, I would assume.
Yeah, I don't think that would be included in that do-nothing job, but...
So are they going to, like, analyze your behavior and then make some reality type show out of this, or
I don't know. I don't know what the whole story behind that is, but pretty odd.
Yeah,
but
the question is, like, why are they doing this?
Yep. Yep. I don't know, but that's the strange and bizarre story coming out of Sweden right now.
You know, you see all these reality shows like X on the Beach and Big Brother and all. I don't know if they do that one anymore, but they probably do. But they always get these muscle bound guys with six packs and trying to find them true love. And my idea, it's $1 million idea, is to get like 10 single women, and it might be hard to find them, that are like super hot, and they figure they're going to be set up with some super hot guys to see what happens. They have to stay in this house for a year, and when they see the guys are real authentic nerds and geeks. Yeah, like overweight, they got the neck beards, and they haven't seen the light of day for years, playing video games in their mother's basements and stuff like that. And they have to stay just to see the disappointment on their faces. And then they have to stay there a year. And if they do, they win all of them win a certain amount of money, and just to see if any romance breaks out. But the guys would get tips on how to deal with it from, like, say, Brad Pitt or George Clooney, on how to act around these women. I think that would be hilarious.
Yep. It'd be great to see their reactions.
I've watched this show Naked and Afraid on the Discovery Channel a few times, and I just call that the butt crack show. Because basically all you see is their butt cracking, you know. They got these big, like, pouches in the front and stuff. And most of the time they're so cold at night, but one of them's married and they, you know, they should be cuddling up for warmth, but they don't because he's married or he's a wimp or whatever. And a lot of them don't last the whole time, but some of them do.
Yep. You see a lot of stuff on Facebook now, you know, would you do this for $1,000? And it would be, you know, an optional thing, like, you know, would you kiss your grandma every day for a year for $1,000, or would you rather sit on a beach and watch the waves every single day for a year for $1,000? You know, it'd just be crazy little things they're coming out with now.
Only for $1,000?
Well, some of it's higher, but I mean, there's just an example. They're coming out with these different weird, I don't know what you want to call them, contest or whatever, but I don't know about staying in a house blindfolded with somebody you've never seen before.
Yeah, I'd love to pitch this show to some executive. They have to be the authentic thing. They can't just be hot guys who wear glasses with, like, tape in the middle to hold them together and a pocket protector and a calculator, you know. They have to be the authentic thing. They can't just be hot guys pretending to be nerds.
Can you even get pocket protectors now?
I don't know. I suppose you can someplace.
Probably make your own with duct tape. I remember them, though. My dad used to get them from the shop where he worked.
Mm-hmm.
They have pocket protectors, but
I did get a note from somebody. I saw a picture, And she was really young at the time. She's like 28 now or something like that. And she was ripping on her mom because she had on Velcro shoes. That's the way you tighten them up.
And, oh, yeah.
And she was complaining about that. So I wrote back. I said, well, just be happy they weren't Croc shoes. If you can even call those shoes. But at the new runnings, I actually did see Croc shoes for sale. I didn't even know they still made them.
That's funny you mentioned the Velcro shoes, because I got a pair of black ones really cheap someplace, and I just threw them away like a couple of weeks ago. They were getting holes and junk in them, and I only used them for work because I didn't want to invest money in a new pair of black shoes for work. So I wore these things till they wore out and finally threw them away, but only used them at work. Didn't use them nowhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny you mentioned that.
I think I've had Velcro shoes at one time too. Actually, these were actually boots. I wore them in school. They don't make them anymore. Or I haven't seen them around here. Is moon boots. They were actually really warm and really super light.
Huh.
I don't know why they ever got rid of them, but I really liked those.
Remember those boots they used to have with the buckles?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
My dad used to have those, and I had them for a while, and then I had the zip-up ones, which are a lot of fun when you had snow and ice kegged in them in the zippers, but...
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I digressed, but that was a style back then.
Yep,
I still get them like that. But.
I had them with the liners.
Yeah. Yep.
And stuff. So, yeah, we could have used those boots this year with the horrible winter we had.
Yep, for sure. That's for sure. I'm glad we're on the outside of it for those of you that don't live anywhere near the upper Midwest region. Just be glad you don't, because it was a bad winter this year.
And now all the flooding in like Nebraska and stuff like that. And I remember going through the polar vortex where it was like, with the combined wind chill and temperature, it was like 50 below. And that's when I did the story of this video of the frozen fox and frozen wolf or coyote, whatever it was, on a lake, and they were in a fight, but they were froze stiff, and the fox looked a little injured. There was some blood on the snow, and they claimed that they were not stuffed animals or nothing, and they were just, and I said, well, why don't they bring those animals in the house? Just to try a cryogenics experiment to see what happened when they thawed out.
Yeah, I remember hearing that story that you did a while back.
Yeah. And repeating that, but that's how cold it was. And then the other day we had like up to 50 mile an hour winds. So that was real fun. And the wind, I was walking during that, and I was actually being pushed around by the wind, and it takes a lot to push me around, so.
Hey, speaking of being pushed around, you remember the time that we went up to Duluth, Minnesota, up in the north part of the state? For those of you not familiar, it's up on the north shore of Lake Superior, but you remember when we went up there and we walked across the lift bridge, and the waves were almost as high as that lift bridge?
Yes, I do. I remember that.
Yep, that was quite the, in fact, if I remember right, they said that that's, at that time, that was the worst that they've seen the lake since the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
And, wow.
If I remember right, I think that's what they were saying about that specific storm, but you and I did it. We walked across that lift bridge, and the waves were almost as high as the bridge itself. So
let's see if I can do this. Edmund Fitzgerald. I think Gordon Lightfoot did that song.
Yep, I think so. I think that's I think you did, but
I remember a radio host up in the cities who was interviewing somebody who was an expert on the Edmund Fitzgerald going down in Lake Superior, and he did the whole interview doing the song. He would ask the questions, but he would do it in the version of the song. How did the Fitzgerald go down? Was it really a terrible experience? You know, he did the whole interview like that, and the producer said, the guy's gonna hang up, don't do that. But the guy stuck with it and kind of got in on the joke, I think, so he stuck with the interview.
Yeah. Yep. It's one thing to have to see it in pictures, but then when you have to get out and you're actually out in there experiencing weather like that, it's not real fun. Like I tell people that tell me all the time, you know, oh, snow is so great and so pretty. And I'm like, yeah, only in pictures.
Yeah. this winter has made me want to move out of the state the most, I think. I was hearing about how Colorado is going to be hit really bad a couple weeks ago or even a shorter amount of time. But I have a classmate who lives out there, and she said, oh, it won't last long. It'll be here a day or two, and then the temperature will be 50 or 60, and it's gone.
Yeah, that's how it happens out there. And even out in the Black Hills, they just got hit bad a couple of days ago, but yet it'll be, they'll be thawed out in no time. It warms up quick there and disappears quick. So unlike here in the Twin Cities, it stays here. And if it wasn't for the rain that we've had here lately, they say we've lost half of our snowfall. It's nice actually to be able to see the curbs now again. So, but it takes a while here compared to Colorado and the Black Hills. So,
yeah, I think I've actually seen some grass.
Yep, buddy of mine took a selfie of him sitting in a little tiny patch of grass in his yard and posted it up on Facebook. So anyway, Randy, I know we're getting short on time here, and I know I've got to get scooting here with some stuff. So I was glad to be able to talk about some of the stuff here and share a couple of stories that I found pretty interesting. So
yeah, it's been a fun time talking with you. And we got a lot of wide variety of topics in.
It's one of those shows that were kind of unstructured. We just brought in whatever, and some of those can be quite interesting. And, hopefully the listeners will have enjoyed it and listen to our rambling here a little bit. Certainly, if you enjoy the program, contact Randy and let him know.
Subscribe.
Say that 10 times fast. Honestly, I didn't have any alcohol.
Subscribe. I'm Edmund Fitzgerald. I'd like to thank CJ for joining me tonight. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. I kind of lost it there, but I can do it a little bit.
Now that the program is done, we must all go down. It's like the Edmund Fitzgerald.
I think we deserved the sound for doing that as well as we did.
Thank you.
Well, just to let you know, and you know this, we're coming up on our 100th episode of Infotainment. And if you can join me for that, that would be great.
Yeah, that'd be fun. We'll have to do something special or uncanny. I am going to get down to close to where your studios are at here sometime soon, so maybe we'll be able to do it in person somewhere down there. So
Yeah, and I've added some new equipment, so you can be on your own mic, and that'll be interesting to set that up. Give the Rodecaster another test.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it, Randy.
Well, you have a good night.
All righty, you too, and thanks for having me on again.
No problem. We'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good. Catch you later.
Bye-bye. And now, since I went through a very long marathon session of editing, I think it's time to call Red Alert and warp drive this podcast to the interwebs. You can tweet my Twitters at Randy Podcaster. You can check out my Facebook page under Infotainment. You can email me at randyms12@gmail.com, randyms1@blogspot.com, and everything else. If you like this program, please subscribe and tell your friends. And that is all for this time. Bye-bye, folks.